On May 1st and 2nd, we're celebrating Public Media Giving Days, a chance for you to show your love for WQED, the home of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Every contribution made to WQED on May 1st and 2nd will be matched dollar for dollar up to $15,000, thanks to WQED's Board of Directors. Plus, we'll send you a one-of-a-kind Mr. Rogers vinyl sticker so you can proudly display your love for WQED anywhere you'd like. Go to wqed.org/pmgd to donate now.
The art is coming from the heart. WQED, voice of art.
This is WQED's Voice of the Arts, and I'm your host, Kamara Dorsey, and today I'm joined by the multi-talented Naomi Allen, also known as Queen of Nairobi. How are you doing today, Naomi?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. So I'm actually really excited that you're here today because I know you. You know,
right.
We used to go to the same school, so that's exciting. But also, I know that as an artist, you have so much to offer, so that's also really why this is exciting to me. So let's start off with the basics for everybody who's listening. How did you get your stage name, Queen of Nairobi?
Okay, it's really a really wonky story. So my real name is Naomi. Normally when people say my name, they call me Naomi. And it's annoying. It's been the thorn in my side for years. But there was this lady that I met one time and she called me Nairobi. I don't know how she got there. And I've had people mispronounce my name and give me all different really weird, like, names. I've been called Naomi, Nami, Nuami. I've even been called Noel one time. But the Nairobi part really threw me. And my two older siblings, because I'm the youngest, so you already know, they just never let it go. And they just bullied me for it. They would call me that name. It irritated my soul. I hated it. But it wasn't until, I want to say, like 10th grade of high school, I was super depressed. I was going through a lot of different things. It's a hard time. And I don't know what it was. That's when I started making music, well, at least recording music, because I had been writing music for a long time since I was a kid. But I didn't start recording music until then. And that was really when I was like, well, I need a stage name. And for some reason, I don't know, maybe it was God, that stage name just came into play and I've kind of fell in love with it. So,
okay. I like that. So you kind of alluded to it a little bit, but you started writing when you were younger. So can you tell me a little bit about, like, what is your artist story? Like, how did you get your start?
Ooh, okay. Okay. So, my two older siblings, they would always sing duets, but I was more of the child that was like, I was outgoing, but I was still kind of like, more, you know, I guess more timid to showcase my talents. I never really knew I could sing until I was 9, but I had been singing since I was 5 years old. And I guess I just thought I really didn't sing because no one really, with the exception of a few times, no one really asked me to sing a solo. It was always my brother and sister. They did all the singing and everyone knew that they could sing. They were in the spotlight. So I guess I just internalized that and thought that I really couldn't sing. So I began singing in church. And it really wasn't, I would always like write. I thought that at the time I wanted to be a visual artist and a writer. So I was always writing things. I don't think I was even cognitive of the fact that they were songs, but I was writing songs and poems and a lot of different things. It really wasn't until I went to like this arts camp that was at East Minister Church, and my mom put me in like some, I don't even know. They had like 3 different art form courses that you could choose, 3 different activities. And I only remember jewelry making, and the other one was probably something to do with music. And there was a talent show they did, and I did it. And everyone was like, oh my gosh, you can sing. I was playing the piano. I was like, oh, they were like, where did you get that from? I was like, I wrote the song. And they were like, that's incredible. I was like, really? From that, and then we had some family friends over one time. We were watching a Tyler Perry play. Don't ask me what it was, but I was going up to the bathroom and I was singing to myself, and they heard me and they were like, you can sing. And like, I feel like this is the calling on your life. So they were just like, we want you to start singing in church. And that's pretty much what started me singing. Also, I think a huge role played into that. Dreamgirls played a huge role in that, okay, too, because that was one of my favorite movies as a kid. I had a lot of, and still do, have some insecurities with my voice, just from going to certain voice instructors, specifically white voice instructors. Yeah. I think with me being so young and having such a big, loud, you know, bold voice, they really didn't know how to market me. They didn't really know what to do with me. And so they kind of tried to put me into a mold and have me sing light and airy. And that was never my voice. I've always been a belter. So yeah. It made me feel like my voice wasn't pretty. And I never really heard anyone with a voice like mine that was mainstream and current. You know, I was listening to a lot of Motown music and stuff like that. And that's where I knew that, like, this used to be an accepted voice, but it felt like it wasn't accepted anymore. So I didn't really like singing until I was introduced to Jill Scott, uh-huh, and Dreamgirls. So when I saw Jennifer Hudson sing, I'm like, she looks like me. She sounds like me. I could do that, too. And that's also how I started acting from watching that movie.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I love that. And even just thinking about how it's like when you feel like what you have to offer is not... it's not, people make you think, oh yeah, this isn't mainstream, this isn't, there's not a place for this, but it's like, yeah, there really is, right? There's, like I said, like, there's an audience for everything. Like, so I think that's really beautiful that you were able to see Jennifer Hudson and see, like, Dreamgirls and, like, wait, that's me right there. Like,
yeah,
that's it. So I think that's really beautiful. So I know you're a singer, we know that, but do you participate in any other art forms?
Yeah. So like I said, I actually got my Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from Point Park University in 2020. I also, I have an art business, okay, called Naomi Nuke That. So it's a visual art business. I primarily focus on multimedia, resin, and paper mache. And my paintings are 3D paintings, so I like to use recycle items and put them on there. One of the things I've kind of started to do with that was taking hair from the hair store,
okay,
and putting it on canvases and then painting a picture with it. So yeah, and then I also really like to write, playwriting, poetry, songwriting, poems, and I also direct.
Okay.
So yeah.
Wow. I didn't know about the directing. I knew about everything else with the directing. That threw me for a loop.
So yeah.
I want to go there and say, where did that come from, that interest in directing?
I really don't know. I think, you know, I've always just kind of, I think what really started it was in terms of acting for me, I've always been typecast. Mm-hmm. And you know, especially when I went to Point Park, it was like, you're the funny black friend because you're funny, or you're the sassy black friend, or you're just the sidekick. Like, and I literally had a teacher. It's so crazy we brought this up. I literally had a teacher that told me that I would never be a lead. I would never be a romantic lead. I was always going to be a secondary role. So that kind of bothered me. And I noticed that from just a young age, from when I first started acting and you know, throughout life. And I was like, it shouldn't be that way. So I began to write plays for myself, and just, I really wanted to fill the void within theater, because there's so much that isn't talked about, so much that we don't get to see.
Yeah.
And I wanted to write that. And I felt like, you know, I had a voice and I wanted to show my perspective on things. So I started, I've been writing plays since I was younger, but I really, really got into it in high school, and I actually directed a play. It was a two-person play, and put it on in high school, wrote and directed it. And ever since then, I was like, yeah, this is something that I really, really like doing. Also, I just think, you know, I'm a teacher, okay, as well, so I feel like I'm good with instruction. I'm good with bringing certain things out of people, and just getting them to look at things in a different viewpoint. So,
okay,
yeah.
I like that. Sorry, I had to go there because I'm like, okay, directing. Yeah. And you don't see a lot of black women directing.
No.
So I love that. And I needed to dig into that real quick.
Yeah.
So we can circle back to the business. Okay, so with your art, like, where do you sell your art?
So it varies. Okay. I have an Instagram. Some people reach out to me on Instagram through there. And it's mainly people that, like, are out of state. Okay. They'll hit me up either on Instagram or when I put it on Facebook, then they'll reach out to me through that way. Because I don't have an eBay or, like, an Etsy right now. It's honestly, I tried to make an Etsy and I did not realize how complicated it was. I'm still a year later trying to figure out how to do that. But yeah, so I also go to various events throughout the city and I'll vend. So I was actually at a lot of the art festivals.
Okay.
And just sell through there. And it's been great, you know. Or sometimes I'll partner up with an organization, like for instance, One Hood. They were doing their voter registrations in 2021. So I was at all the voter registrations selling my art, and I made a lot of money doing that too. I'm like, I hope they do it again so I can get some more money. But yeah.
Okay. So like I was saying before, on Voice of the Arts, so we're definitely aiming to highlight diverse stories in the art community. So I want to know, and we got into it a little bit, but like being a Black woman in Pittsburgh, what has your experience been in the art scene? And you can talk you can talk about anything. You can talk about music. You can talk about acting, directing, you know, whichever route you want to go. It's fine.
Lord Jesus. you know, yeah. Okay. So I kind of got into it on the acting side. It's definitely been difficult. Lots of typecasting. I have not been acting since I left Point Park. I lost my passion there, and Point Park just was it was a horrible experience. A lot of racism, a lot of discrimination, a lot of sexism, definitely classism. So the work that I did there, I was like, listen, I'm just going to do what I got to do just so I can get out of here and get my degree. So, I can't really speak too much. Well, I can speak on an outside perspective and just from when I was auditioning and what I saw. Definitely not enough representation for Black women in theater, and we're not seeing enough of us in theater, especially brown skin and darker skin women or plus size women in theater. And that's really frustrating. So that's been hard for me because, like I said, if I were to go into a role right now here, I'm most likely going to be cast as, the funny friend or the sidekick. So as far as music, I'll say God has really blessed me. I've been able to this entire year, I have performed like every day of this entire year.
Wow.
Just a lot of shows, and it's been really great. But I have noticed there is, like, I've been trying to get a band. So I have dancers and a DJ currently. But I really, really want a band because there's not enough live music anymore, especially when you listen to music on the radio. Everything is, you know, produced technologically.
Yeah.
And so I want that live feel to come back. I want that soul, that passion back in music. And it's been so difficult to try and get a band as a Black woman because I've essentially run into musicians when I would be direct on what I want and tell them, listen, this is what I want. This is what I need it by. You know, let's get serious about this. It was almost like they were treating me and looking at me as if I were a diva.
Mm.
And it was so frustrating because I'm like, no, I have a voice. I'm being adamant on what I want. And I've been screwed over by some instrumentalists because they were treating me like I was an angry Black woman just because I was telling them, this is what we need. This is the vision that I have.
Yeah.
And it needs to be up to par with that. So that's been difficult. I've also just in general noticed there's still some discrimination there within our music scene, and it's not as friendly to women that are plus size or women that are attractive, if you will. It's almost like we, have, as Black women, have to be attractive to the male gaze. And when you aren't speaking on your body or anything sexual or anything that is explicit, which I don't, my music's clean, then it's, you're not really taking it seriously. And it's also like, you know, so when I've tried to get a manager, especially male managers, it's either that they won't work with me because I'll notice that they're trying to, you know, that they won't work. I notice that they won't manage me unless I put out in a sexual way. Let's say that. And so when I am adamant and I'm like, I'm not doing that, then it's like, oh, well, we ain't going to work with you. Your music's cool, but we're not going to bother with you because I can't get you to do what I want you to do. The same thing with, I'm just not willing to really compromise on my morals. Mm-hmm. And that has also been a roadblock in terms of getting management because, you know, sex really does sell. And yep. That's what they want. And that's not the type of artist that I am. So it's been hard. I don't always feel respected in some spaces. And so I just remove myself. Also, I will say it's also been difficult because the sad thing is a lot of my negative experiences have not been in white spaces or from white organizations. Wow. I've actually been very respected by them and they've known my value. They've known my worth and they've paid me my value and worth. Whereas some Black spaces, some Black organizations have slighted me, underpaid me. You know, there was a show that I did, I want to say in May, I think. And I noticed that all the men were being paid more. All the men were being paid more. And when I went to the person who was organizing the event, who had booked, you know, me and everyone else, I sat them down and I was very respectful, but I was just like, you know, are you able to give me a breakdown on what the pay rates are? Of course, this person lied to me. I had the proof, but this person lied to me. And then they eventually raised up my, you know, my rate or whatever, but it was still a slap in the face. Yeah. They initially offered me $75 for a 15-minute set. And I've never had anyone pay me that, such a small amount. But I went along with it because, you know, I'm willing to do shows for free or for a small amount if it's for community.
Yeah.
Or if it's for like mental health or something like a good cause that's within my brand, I will do that with no problem. And that's what this person promoted it as to me. They were like, this is for the community. This is for the community of Homewood. So I, you know, I was like, okay, sure, I'll do that. Even though I had dancers, I have three dancers, I have
everybody.
A DJ. I'm like, $75 isn't paying me. It's not even covering, you know, some nails for me. But I was like, whatever, I'll pay them out of my own pocket. I'll do what I have to do. But then to find out that all these men were being paid more and none of them were headlining, none of them had, you know, the resume that I had, it was just crazy. And then once I brought it up to that person and they did increase my rate, it still wasn't enough to cover everybody I had to pay. But I said, okay, whatever. I went with it. And then there was all this retaliation against me from that point on. And now the relationship with this organization has just been compromised, which is fine. I won't do anything else with them. But I've been running into a lot of situations like that. And when you say, hey, you know, I actually should be paid this, it's not respected.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is, but I've only noticed that with Black women. I have not noticed that with any other racial group, with men. I mean, and it's frustrating because there's a lot of artists I know that have the resume to back up why they deserve this opportunity or this pay or whatever. And they're not getting shows. they aren't represented well, they aren't appreciated, they're underpaid. And, you know, that's something that I've been dealing with. But I do, you know, of course I credit God, because God's definitely the reason why I haven't run into too many situations like that. But I have ran into enough to where I'm like, okay, I really need a manager because I don't want to deal with this anymore. So, whew, it's hard.
It's like, how I find that so crazy that, like you're saying, like, I have this resume, I have these things that I can show you. Like, I can show you a laundry list of what I've done, what I've accomplished, and the people who can back me. And it's like, people are trying to tell you, oh, no, actually, this is what you're worth. And it's like, you can't do that. Like, I can show you my resume. So I find that crazy that it's like, people are trying to, especially black women, trying to tell black women, no, actually, this is what you're worth.
And black women and black men.
Yeah. And it's like, and if you don't want to go along with what we're telling you, then no. Like, you're off. So.
Just disregard it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I don't love that. I don't love that at all. And I think you alluded to a little bit of mental health being a part of your brand, and I kind of wanted to get a little bit into that. So we all know the pandemic. I feel like since the pandemic, a lot more people have been comfortable to say, like, my mental health is not in the best place, and, you know, I'm trying to get help. So, and I know you've opened up about mental health struggles. So what has the journey been like of sustaining your mental health also, like, as a black woman and as an artist? You can, you know, like I said before, you can tackle that however you see fit, but just, like, kind of get into that so people can hear, like, what is that like?
Okay, well, that has been, it's been a journey for sure. I could say, and I think this is definitely common within black families, period. Talking about mental health is taboo. Going to therapists is not a thing. And because of slavery, we have been taught to just push through everything, bulldoze through any problem you have. And if you don't, you're lazy and you're dramatic. And that has definitely been my experience within my family. You know, I definitely wasn't really raised to be vulnerable or be in tune with my emotions. And it's a huge reason why I felt stunted in a lot of ways. I don't express grief. Well, of course, everyone has their different ways of expressing grief. But I know grief or anything that's painful, I just hold it in. Because that's what I was taught to do, was hold it in. You got to go to work. You got to pay the bills. You got to do this. You know, you don't take that time for yourself and heal and take that attention and care, because that's just not a thing. Wasn't what I was taught. So it has been difficult because for a long time I have been depressed and suffer from anxiety, suffer from PTSD, and it's been undiagnosed and unnoticed by my family. And I also didn't even really recognize it because, you know, it just felt so normal to me to feel that way, that I thought, well, I'm just having a bad day. This is just, you know, maybe I am lazy. Maybe I am dramatic. Maybe I just need to, you know, suck it up and, you know, not make this about me. But it really wasn't until I went to college and I noticed that all of my peers, my white peers, you know, they were so open about their mental health. They, you know, some of them were on antidepressants. They all had therapists. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, this is such a culture shock to me. This is so different. Their parents had therapists. I mean, it was, some of them went to therapy with their parents, and it was something that was established to them since birth. And I was like, you know, that's something that it always should be that way. I think the same way that we go to the doctor to maintain our physical health, we should be doing that with our mental health. Yeah. So, unfortunately, it did take for me to have a breakdown, a series of breakdowns, the first time I ever had a breakdown was junior year in high school. But when I was in college, because like I said, I was just being attacked every day, it was truly, truly, I recognize now that it was spiritual warfare as well. But I was having panic attacks every day at one point. And it was just so bad that there was these panic attacks. Each time I felt like I was going to die. And each time it got worse. I couldn't breathe. My chest was so tight. It felt like I was having a heart attack. And my family member, my mom, she started to notice it. And she's like, well, what's the problem? I never really opened up to them about it because I remember a time where I tried to. And my dad was like, I was 21. And my dad was like, what are you depressed for? You have no reason to be depressed. And which I had a lot of reasons to be depressed. Let's be serious. I had a lot of reasons to be depressed. But he was like, you know, you got a place to stay. There's food on the table. You got clothes on your back. I pay the bills. There's no reason to be depressed. So I just didn't speak to my family about things that I was going through. And I just kind of dealt with it. And then eventually I had to go to therapy, but it took a while for me to go to therapy because I had professors telling me, Naomi, you need to go to therapy. Wow. This is serious. You know, and it was really only two professors. But they were like, this is serious. I am seriously concerned about you. And my peers were also like, yeah, you should probably do something about this. Like, there's help that you can get. Like, if you need advice on how to do this, we'll help you. And I was like, there is nothing wrong with me. I don't know what they're saying. I'm like, I'm okay. You know, it's just a bad day. I'm all right. But it took for, I didn't go to therapy until after I graduated. Yeah, what's that? Yeah, after I graduated in 2021, unfortunately, I was raped. And I have, there's just been a history of sexual abuse in my life. Wow. But when I was raped, that just kind of took me over the edge. Because prior to that, I had been, you know, only sexually assaulted. I had never been raped. And my consolation to myself was always, at least I wasn't raped. So when I was raped, I was like, there's no consolation at this point. You know, and I did not trust myself. I was extremely suicidal, which is something I had been dealing with since a young age. But at that point, I was like, I might just really do it. There's really nothing stopping me from taking my life at this point. So I put myself in therapy because I didn't trust myself. And it's been the best decision I've made. You know, there's still some moments where I feel that depression creeping up. But I have the tools now. Yeah. I'm so much more emotionally intelligent. And that's kind of just, I've been writing music about mental health. But I've definitely focused on that a lot in my music and also just with teaching and working with the youth and being in education because it's something so common. Yeah. I see so many kids struggling with it that are suicidal. I've had conversations with children that tell me they're depressed, or even children that have children or youth that have had their parents take their lives and they knew about it, or you know, it's such a serious thing. And I think mental health within the Black community is really bad because there's so many disorders and diseases that are undiagnosed. Yeah. And especially within children, these children are going through school, going throughout their whole lives, not knowing that they, you know, have this disorder, this disease, and they don't have that support. So I've just been trying to, you know, of course, stay on that right path and take care of myself, but also to help and encourage youth especially, and also some adults, but you know, that's a bit hard. Some adults can be stubborn, but in general, just encourage that that need, because when you know, when your physical, everything's connected. When your physical body is good, your spiritual body can be good, but when one thing is off, everything is off.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing that and just opening up, because I mean, you didn't have to share that, but I think it's important, and I know people who are going to listen to this, they're going to find something that they're like, they identify with. So I want to say thank you for, you know, sharing that with us. And yeah, I definitely agree. I want to kind of tag along onto like Black families not validating, like, they kind of seem like something's wrong with them. And it's like, you're just having a bad day. And it's like, I've been having a bad day for 5 years.
Yes. Oh.
Like, and you've been having a bad day since the day I was born. Like, it's not making sense. And so I think that it's important that this message is out there. And so I'm so glad that we're doing this right now. And also even just for creatives, I feel like creatives are very afflicted. And who, you know, if you know, you know, if you listen to this, you will know people who are creative, who have any kind of creative bone in their body. If they're an artist, if they're a musician, a singer, a rapper, a poet, whatever your art form is, highly afflicted. And people will just say, well, that's just how the creatives are. And it's like, I mean, yeah, some creatives are just kind of emotional, and that's mm-hmm. okay. But for the most part, a lot of people who do have creative things coming out of them are unfortunately the most tormented mentally and spiritually. And I think that's why it is important to say, you know what, I've been having a bad day for the past 10 years. Like, I got to go mm-hmm. and get help before things don't turn out the way that I want them to. So I just think that's such an important part of the conversation as being a creative. So thank you for that. And I want to take a turn and talk about your song Blue, because I'm going to play that for people. They're going to hear this on the podcast. And so what is like the story behind the song Blue?
Okay. It's so funny, actually. I actually wrote this song. I was in my dorm junior year of college, and I was just having such a hard time writing music because I just had writer's block. I was uninspired, and I guess that was probably because of my mental state at the time. But, you know, just couldn't write anything. I tried for so long to write a song, could not write anything. And I stumbled across this beat on YouTube by this guy that's in London. His name is Naze. And I was like, oh, I really like the beat. And it was almost like as soon as I heard the beat, I knew what to say. Mm-hmm. But I definitely believe God gave me the lyrics, because, child, I couldn't think of nothing. But so he gave me the lyrics. I wrote them down. I started off with the hook, and then it led to the first verse. And so that's really all I had at the time. And so I tried really hard to find someone to be a feature, because I was like, I just feel like this is supposed to be a feature. And so I reached out to this guy on Instagram. He was supposed to be on the song. He's like, yeah, I want to do it. And I sent him the song. Never heard back from this guy. Like, he just completely ghosted me. So I was like, that's weird, but whatever. So then I go and ask this other guy, and I had no business asking this guy because he was my ex. We were like okay terms, but you know, I don't know what I was thinking. I was just like, well, you know, musically, he's a great artist. Yeah. So I reached out to him. He said he was going to do it. He played me too. And it was like, he just kept saying he was going to do it. It was just like promise after promise, and it never was happening. So I was like, man, why is it so hard just to get this song done? So then I was like, forget it. I'm going to go and write the second verse myself. I don't need nobody else on it. So I go and write the second verse. And it was still good. The second verse was good. And then I recorded it. And then the person that I recorded with at this particular studio, I don't know what it was. It was just like problem after problem with recording the song. And, you know, I kept pushing and nudging him to mix and master the song. And he was just like, oh, I'm going to get around to it. And he just wasn't doing it. And I was like, I'm sick and tired of this. And so, it was like a whole year went by, because when I actually recorded the first, the original demo to the song, that was in 2018. So then some time goes by, it's 2019, and I meet the guy who's on the track, Jay the Anomaly. And he was at the studio. It was my first time ever meeting this guy. And we just kind of began to talk or whatever, you know, just get to know each other. And some time goes by, like a week, I would say. And I don't know what it was. We were in the studio, and I was like, I just feel like I'm supposed to ask him to be on this song. I don't know what it is, but I was like, I'm just going to ask him, see what he says. I had heard some of his music, and I liked it, and I felt like he would match the vibe. And, like, we would, you know, we would have the chemistry on the track, you know, musically. So mm-hmm. I asked him, I played it for him. He had his eyes closed. He was like really and visualizing it. He was super serious. I was like, okay. And he was like, okay, yeah. He was like, what exactly do you want me to talk about on this? And I was like, well, I want you to talk about love from your perspective, you know, ideally. So he did. And pretty soon he had it, you know, ready to go. He showed it to me. It was great. I'm like, let's record it. We still had some roadblocks in getting the song mixed and mastered. So we actually recorded at that studio, had to go to another studio. At that studio, I probably recorded probably 3 or 4 times because they lost the version. And actually, before I even went to that studio, someone else had mixed it, like 3 or 4 different people mixed it. It just wasn't working out, which led me to go to that studio. And at that studio, he lost it, had to re-record it all over. But finally it worked out and it was great. And you know what's so crazy about this song is I actually wrote that song about some other guy, not worth my time. But I'm actually dating Jay the I'm dating the featured artist on the track now. And I'm like, you know, when I look back, I kind of just thought about it. And I look back and I was like, you know, God really gave me those lyrics. And I feel like he was showing me, he was kind of setting it up because he really pointed this guy out to me. And I feel like he was showing me just what love is supposed to be. And so now, and I had never experienced the love I was talking about in that song, which is why I was really saying, like, this is what love is. And you can tell from the song that I hadn't experienced that. I've never been in love. I've loved, but now I realize it was really just infatuation. But I'm actually experiencing that love okay. with him now. So I was like, wow, it was a full circle moment for sure. But it took some time. The song didn't come out till 2019, I want to say 2020, I think. And the video came out same time. So child, took some time, but you know, things, it came out according to God's timing and his plan. So, you know,
that's wonderful. Okay. Now a little boo thing. Got to make it a song.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
They say they don't know what love is, but I know. Yeah, I know. They say they don't know what love is, but I know. Yeah, I know. Standing out in the pouring rain, I feel jaded. I'm not with you when I hate it, but my heart's been reincarnated. Love is you. Love is how I feel when I'm around you. Love is thanking God that I found you. It's arguments and lacking common sense, but nonetheless you come to their defense at your expense. You know my weaknesses, so you never offend. I know your flaws, there's no reason for you to pretend. He prays for my well-being like it's his religion. They say they don't know what love is, but I know. Yeah, I know. They say they don't know what love is,
yeah, they say,
but I know,
but I know,
yeah, I know.
Listen, feeling getting different, yeah. If you listen how I give recognition, yeah. To anybody but you, you see, yo, yeah, there's something different. When I see you in the vision, kinda like religion, all up in my spirit, like, whoop. You give a dog to your passion, like an actress, yeah, in a beautiful scene, yeah. Thick and brown, yeah, an ebony queen, yeah. No need to frown, when you all of my dreams. And it seems like L-O-V-E is an abundance for you and me. See, I ain't fronting, coming from a view that the corners ain't cutting. You give me everything. Without you, I am nothing. Where would King be without Coretta? Know a better. Think about the effect Michelle had in Barack's efforts. Yeah, either getting to our goals, yeah, getting somewhere better. Yeah, this that message that I'm writing on that blue letter. What?
They say they don't know.
They say,
no.
They say,
they say they don't know.
They say,
no.
They say,
they say they don't know.
But I know, but I know, but I know. Say.
La 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 la. La 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 la.
Say.
La 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 la.
What I know, what I know, what I know. Yeah.
La 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 la. 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 La la la. La 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 la.
La 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 la.
So I'm curious to know, we kind of talked about low moments as like a Black woman and being an artist, but what would you say are like one or two of your proudest moments of being an artist?
Oh, my proudest moments of being an artist. I would say first, just like I have a few, but all the times when I've had people come up to me afterwards and they tell me how good the song is, I think that always touches me. Not even just that song, but anytime I perform, some of my songs that are like more so talking about mental health and stuff, I've had mothers with their daughters come up to me and tell me how that song was literally about them and how it ministered and touched them. And then I've had, other people come up and say, older women in their 30s come up and say, I just never felt so represented. I've never heard a track talk about me or talk about my life in such a way ever. But I think probably the best moment was when there was this little boy. He was probably like 9 years old. And he came up to me after I had a show at the Kelly and the Kelly Strayhorn. And he came up to me afterwards. He like chased me down. he chased me outside. And he was like, he was so shy. He was so cute. He was a little dark skinned boy with locks. He was adorable. And he was like, I just wanted to tell you that I really liked your song. And it really like touched me. And I was like, wow. Oh my God, because, and it touched me, but it also made me sad because, you know, in that song I was talking about like suicide. I was talking about abusive relationships that I was in. I was talking about a lot of different things in that song. And I was like, I can't even imagine what he's going through at 9 years old, that this song I wrote that song at 17, 18, to know that this song is something that touched him and impacted him like that. It was like a touching moment, but it was bittersweet at the same time. But I also was like, I'm happy to know, because I kind of didn't want to do that show, to be honest, but I was glad I did it because I felt like, okay, he needed to hear that. He probably isn't hearing that from anywhere else. I don't know what the music he's listening to is like, but I can only imagine given what's on mainstream. And, you know, I was just grateful that I could kind of plant that seed in him. And I was able to have a conversation with him, and he was telling me about his art, his visual art. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, just keep it up, you know, you're amazing. I was speaking life into him, and he was like, oh no, I don't think my artwork is good. I was like, what? So we were having a conversation, and that was definitely a proud moment. And I would say a second proud moment of mine probably would be I've had some pretty big venues. I performed at the Kelly Strayhorn in March of this year. Nearly had a sold out house. Okay. I don't have an album out. I literally only have one song out that's relatively new, which is Blue. And most of my performances have been unreleased music, which is going to be on my album that's supposed to be coming out this fall. But yeah, I had nearly a sold out house with all these people at the Kelly, and they paid me $3,000 for that show, which is the most I've ever been paid. It was only a 45-minute set. And before that, I would say I had did a show in the middle of the pandemic for the City Theater. It was a drive-in festival, and so everybody was in their car, and they could listen to it on the radio. And it was this huge stage at Hazelwood Green. There were two big screens that they could watch from, or they could listen to it through the radio. And it was packed, and I wasn't the only person performing in that show, but that was before the Kelly, but that show was packed, and I was like, what? And it was all these people honking their horns like, yeah, girl. And I got paid $1,500 for that show, and I was like, that was my first big check. So I was tweaking. I was so happy. I was geeked. I was like, I got a $1,500 check. But at first I thought it was a mistake because I went in my account and it was direct deposit, and I was like, whose money is this? did somebody wire me the check and it wasn't supposed to be in my account? But yeah, I was excited about that. So then when I went to the Kelly and I had that show, I was like, okay, this kind of was like the foundation for this show because, it was just like, it was great. It was just great.
I love that, you know, and it's like you said, it's like people will know your worth. So they're like, yes, instead of, you know, like the other people before where it's like, no, we're not going to do that. And it's like, you know, you go into the spaces and people know your worth. And it's like, that's really where you get to flourish and you get to have those experiences where people like that really impacted me. So
yeah.
I love that. And I think that's wonderful. So I know there are people who listen to Voice of the Arts and they themselves are artists. So I want to ask you, like, what encouragement would you give to people who feel discouraged in their journey as an artist?
You know, everything happens in seasons. You know, there was a point in which when I was doing music, because I've been doing music since, like, writing, recording, and performing, you know, actually performing the music I recorded, you know, let's forget when I was a child, but actually professionally doing it since 2014. And for years, I was like, man, I'm just overshadowed. Like, no one's really, I'm not being booked as much as I would like to be. My music isn't, you know, it's not being promoted. People aren't really listening to it as much. And I was really frustrated and discouraged. And I was like, maybe this isn't the path for me. Maybe this is something I shouldn't do. But I was like, okay, well, I'll just keep working on myself in the meantime, keep rehearsing, keep writing, keep recording. I had a website. Nobody ever viewed that website, but I updated it every time I had something new anyways, because I was like, one day, people are going to view, they are going to, you know who I am. I will get booked. I just have to have this belief in myself. No one else will. So what I would say is, you know, definitely don't give up and recognize that there's seasons and, you know, continue to work on your craft. You know, learn. There's never a point in which you stop learning. So study other artists. Take a business class on marketing, and proper rollouts. So, you know, like when it comes time to release a song, the proper way to do it, because, tagging 93 people on Facebook is not the proper way to promote a song. I'm sorry. You know, get some distribution, get a distribution deal through DistroKid or TuneCore, and just like do whatever you need to do, to learn about how you can be successful, whether you want to be independent or signed. And I think what also really helped me was I actually just wrote down, all of my goals in a notebook, all the things I want to do 3 to 5 years, and especially now. And I wrote in there, I will be booked by the end of, like, by next year. I will be booked. I will have this. And all the things I wrote and just prayed over, I have. And I know that's not on my own accord. You know, I've definitely worked and rehearsed a lot, but I know that that was from God. So understand that you may be in a dry season, but that doesn't mean that your plants aren't going to grow. It's just a dry season. So prepare and prep for the end that dry season, because you're probably in your dry season because you're not ready to experience overflow. So do what you have to do in that season, and to prepare yourself, because when the overflow comes, it's going to be so much more than what you expected, and you have to be ready for that blessing.
About to get me started, but you know, but you know, we've been chatting here for a long time. Yes, I'm gonna have to tag onto that real quick and say, you know, I have to agree with you, because it's like, you may ruin it. You may ruin it if you get something. If you're like, I really want to get like 3 shows, okay, let's say you get 3 shows and you ruin them because you're not ready.
Yes,
or you get into a art show and you ruin it because you weren't ready. And so I really think that's a great encouragement. So I'm tagging on to her encouragement and say, listen to her, because she knows what she's talking about.
Timing's everything.
Timing is everything. And so, you know, with that being said, I just want to say thank you for being here today. Thank you for giving me your time and really sharing everything that you have to offer as an artist. But before we go, I just want to ask you, is there anything else you want to share with me? Any events that you're doing soon that people should know about?
I have a show October 1st at Hazelwood Green.
Okay.
It's for Hazelwood Community Day. It's a free event. There will be food and vendors, so I definitely suggest to come out to that. It's going to be great. And other than that, my album, ooh, child, this album. I literally have 3 songs to finish, and I don't know why it's been so hard, but I do plan on releasing that in the fall. Okay. So the album is called Mood Ring. Blue is the lead single on Mood Ring. And so if you liked Blue, then I would suggest to be on the lookout for the album. And you can go to my website, www.queenofnairobi.net. And Nairobi is N-A-I-R-O-B-I. You'll find out all my information, my social media, and you'll be able to see all of my streaming platforms, because my music's on all streaming platforms. But yeah, that's the best place to go if you want to stay in the know of what I'm doing.
Okay. All right. So thank you once again for being here. And I don't know if I'm about to put you on the spot, because I know you can sing.
Oh.
But you know... You know, Voice of the Arts, you know, we love music, we love musicians, we love any kind of artist, but, you know, you can tell me no, but do you want to do a little jingle to close us out? Something that has to do with WQED or R or anything,
oh.
You know, it could be something, you could just make it up, but, you know, close it
a
out.
Jingle
in a
jingle for WQED.
Way.
Oh, whoa.
I just hired her, y'all. I just hired her.
The art is coming from the heart. WQED, Voice of Art. I don't know.
Oh my gosh. I love that. Wow. I'm Camara Dorsey, and you've been listening to WQED's Voice of the Arts. Wow.